Okay, then sit here. Yeah, because we're going to go in order.
Do you want to have a seat right here?
Yeah, I'm going to start with Jen and then go like this down the way. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Well, hi everyone. Welcome and thank you so much for your patience in us organizing this very important discussion. My name is Susan LeBlanc. I'm the NDP spokesperson for Community Services and also the MLA for Dartmouth North. And it's truly my privilege to host today's press conference. I'd like to start by acknowledging that we are gathered in Mi'kma'ki, which is the ancestral and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people. And I'd like to welcome you all here. There are many people here from the disabilities community and many advocates from many organizations. And welcome. I see you, I'm not able at this time to recognize all of the many groups that are here, but thank you so much for being here. I'd also like to thank and welcome some former and currently sitting politicians. We have with us the former MP from Dartmouth Coal Harbour, Wendy Lill, who is also a strong advocate for people with disabilities and part of the Community Homes Action Group. So welcome, Wendy. We have the NDP leader, current NDP leader and MLA for Halifax Shabakto, Gary Burrell, is with us. And we also have a former MLA and of Halifax Shabakto, Howard Epstein, with us. So thank you all for joining us. At our table here, I'll just list the people who will be presenting today. On my very far left is Jen Powley, the co-chair of No More Warehousing. Next to Jen is Barbara Horner of the Disability Rights Coalition. Next to Barb is Jeannie Whitten, who is part of People's First Nova Scotia, and this is Donna Lee, also of People's First Nova Scotia. And we may have people join us at the table as well. So I'd like to just begin by saying that the issue of community housing options for people with disabilities came back to the forefront through the efforts of so many people who are in this room, and many who are not here, but who have been advocates around the province. And of course, the recent decision of the Human Rights Board of Inquiry, which found the government violated the human rights of three individuals. And that decision was a hard-won victory for Beth McLean, Sheila Livingston, and Joey Delaney. However, it is very disappointing that that decision did not find that the discrimination that those three faced is not a systemic issue in this province. There are hundreds of people with disabilities still waiting for community housing. Instead of forcing each and every individual to go through the process of filing a human rights complaint as their only recourse, the Liberal government should aim to rectify the situation for all people affected. Just last week, we learned that the government's latest budget does not include any new money for small options homes or move us any closer to reaching the goals of the roadmap for transforming the Nova Scotia Services to Persons with Disabilities program, which was released in 2013. When that roadmap was presented to the government at the time, the report included a five-year plan that would have seen all recommendations in place by 2018, including ensuring people with disabilities to have access to the same full range of affordable and accessible housing in the community that is available to all Nova Scotians. The Community Homes Action Group have repeatedly given the government a failing grade on this file. They have recommended an investment in at least 25 new small option homes each year for the next 3 years. The recent budget only continues to promise the same 8 community option homes that have been in development for the past 2 years. So this is the third budget that I have had the privilege of examining as an MLA, and this budget line has not changed. I've been asking the same questions about these houses, and nothing has really moved forward. When I've questioned the Minister of Community Services about this, her response has been that that the work is long and hard. And I am sure that is absolutely true. However, it's been too long, and change must happen. It's not acceptable. That's all I am going to say for now. I will continue to introduce the speakers, but for now I'm going to turn things over to Jen Powley, the co-chair of No More Warehousing.
Hi, I'm Jen. I am a 41-year-old woman. I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis at 15. I decided that I did not want MS to define my life. I moved to Halifax from Alberta when I was 23. For the last decade, I have required 24/7 supports. I had to leave my job at the Ecology Action Center in 2013 when my voice was no longer loud enough to carry in meetings. My parents do their utmost to support me. They have sold off family farmland in Alberta in order to provide me with the care I need. Now, there is no more farmland left to sell. My parents can no longer afford the $100,000 annual bill for my care. Now, I am faced with going into a nursing home. I am not the only person facing this situation. There are over 240 people with severe physical disabilities between the ages of 18 and 60 currently being housed in nursing homes. Because people with severe physical disability are warehoused in nursing homes, we started No More Warehousing, the Nova Scotia Association for Inclusive Homes and Support Group. We held a panel discussion at Halifax Central Library at the end of February to increase public awareness. In a TV interview following the panel, Premier McNeill said the government will eventually make it possible for all people with disabilities to live in the community. Just not yet. The government has a plan. We have to be patient and understand that change takes time. Over 6 years, government closed 25 institutional beds. At that rate, it will take over 150 years for them to close all the institutions. Let's face it, government ministers have been saying the same thing for more than 20 years. We need action, not words. Government reports in Nova Scotia, dating from 1984, have regularly recommended that people with disabilities are supported in communities, not segregated, in institutions and nursing homes. We need government to dedicate the budget to implement the promises they made in 2013. Yes, I said. We need government to dedicate the budget to implement the promises they made in 2013. In 2013, both the NDP and the current Liberal government fully endorsed the roadmap for transforming the Nova Scotia Services to Persons with Disabilities program. They committed to implementing the recommendations of the roadmap by 2023. Since the government made this commitment, the number of people with disabilities waiting for basic supports and services to live in the community has grown by almost 50%. The number of people unnecessarily institutionalized for no medical or legal reason, simply because they have a disability, has also grown. The government's actions contradict the Premier's words. 6 years after the roadmap was adopted, the 10-year plan for implementation is still only in the initial stages. That's not good enough. Discrimination, you say? You better believe it. This is a gross violation of human rights in our province. There is no sign of movement on relocating the 240 Nova Scotians under 60 with severe physical disability from their nursing homes to homes that are part of the community. As well as that 240, there are 1,100 disabled individuals living in other large institutions. That's over 1,300 people in institutions in Nova Scotia who should not be living there. The UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities was adopted by Canada in 2010. This convention says that persons with disability deserve the same choices as people without disability. Nova Scotia's Accessibility Act of 2017 also places importance on the inclusion of people with disability into everyday society. Yet, the government is still unnecessarily placing people with disabilities in nursing homes and institutions far removed from society. On March 3rd, a Nova Scotia Human Rights Commission Board of Inquiry ruled in the Emerald Hall case that it was discriminatory to institutionalize three specific people who could have been living in the community. The ruling was careful to say that each case must be looked at individually. Therefore, we encourage everyone who is institutionalized, who does not want to be there, to file a human rights complaint. People with severe physical disabilities need to live where we can be part of the community. We need to be able to have 24/7 care as we require it. Warehousing is a violation of our fundamental rights, and we are demanding justice.
Thank you very much, Jen. Next, we'll hear from Barbara Horner from the Disability Rights Coalition.
So the Disability Rights Coalition is here today because of the blatant ongoing discrimination of individuals with disabilities in Nova Scotia over the last 20 years. The recent Board of Inquiry decision did find discrimination, as Jen mentioned, for the three individual complainants, Beth, Joey, and Sheila, and we were so pleased that they won their case. However, even though government officials testified during the inquiry that all people can live in community and that the current system is broken and inequitable, systemic discrimination was not addressed. Rather absurdly, it has been suggested that hundreds, maybe thousands of individuals and family members on the wait list file their own human rights complaint. Does this not make it clear that there is a human rights crisis in our province crying out for leadership and updated legislation for the most vulnerable people of our society? Nova Scotia has fallen behind both national and international standards with no regard for the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. We understand that there are over 1,500 people on the wait list currently looking for suitable living accommodations in community. We must close our institutions. However, we cannot continue to ignore and neglect aging and senior parents who continue to support their sons and daughters, their adult sons and daughters, at home. They are alone and isolated and often simply give up. No one is in a caregiving role longer than parents who have children with disabilities. It is lifelong, with little recognition or validation for the role that we play. When the Transformation Roadmap document came out in 2013, the disability community had high hopes for progress. After 6 years, we remain deeply frustrated and disappointed with the lack of progress, the lack of partnership and collaboration, and broken promises. What government has promised to date at this point is not enough. 8 small option homes is not enough. It's not good enough. And it's shameful. We invited the premier to meet with us in person today to receive our open letter. We did not hear from his office. On behalf of the 100,000 individuals and organizations who signed the open letter, we seek support from our democratically elected government to fix what is broken, to do the right thing. We are calling on the premier to make a legislated multi-year funding commitment to be fully implemented by 2023 to end discrimination and to recognize the equal right of all persons to live in community. Don't doubly victimize people with disabilities by denying them their rights and then forcing them through the legal system and then the courts. Respect and fulfill their right to live independently in the community now. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Barbara. And now we'll hear from Jeannie Whitten from People's First Nova Scotia.
My name is Jeannie Whitten. I'm a member of People First and People First Nova Scotia. People First Nova Scotia has been working to free people with intellectual disabilities from life in an institution since our organization started in 1989. We believe, that people should not be forced to live in an institution just because they have a disability, but that everyone has the right to live in the community. In 2014, People First Nova Scotia made a film about Nova Scotia's long history of forcing people with disabilities in an institution called the Freedom Tour. While this film was being made, the government promised to make change to the way that people with disabilities are supported in this province so that they do not have to live in institutions. The roadmap for transforming the Nova Scotia Service to Persons with Disability program says the people with disabilities have a right to live and be included in the community, and that they should have the maximum control over their lives. The roadmap promises to make sure that no one would have to live in an institution if they didn't need to by 2023. The fact that there are more than thousands of people with disabilities who are still living in institutions shows that Nova Scotia is not doing enough to keep these promises and support our rights. Nova Scotia has made some steps toward providing more community housing for people with disabilities, but not so far. There are only 8 new small option homes planned, with only 3 of these actually in the works right now. At this rate, there are no way the government will be able to fulfill the promise to 2013. It's wrong to make a promise like this and then back away from it or not do what you said you would do. Canada adopted on the Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities 2010. Article 19 on the convention says that people with disabilities have the right to live in the community. Nova Scotia was a key part in writing this convention, but it's one of the new remaining provinces that still lock people with disabilities in institution instead of providing support for people in the community. Living in an institution is horrible, you know that. Many of our members have lived in institutions where they did not have freedom to make their own choice, control over their lives, even leave when they wanted to. People with disabilities deserve better. If the government thinks that an institution is an okay place for people to live, they should go try living in an institution themselves. They should too, and see what it's like. And see how they like it. You wouldn't last, they wouldn't. To those people still forced to live in institutions in Nova Scotia, People First Nova Scotia encourage you to file a human rights complaint against the government to demand the right to live in the community and be respected. We, People First, still stand with you. So government, we are calling on the government to keep its promise and to set our people free.
Thank you so much, Jeannie. Now we're going to hear from Donna Lee from People's First.
Hi, I'm Donna Lee. I'm a provincial advisor for People First Nova Scotia, and really, I just want to support what Jeannie has said here. That was powerful. The many stories that I've heard personally from people with intellectual disabilities echo Jeannie's words. They are adamant in their demand that institutions must not be places where people with disabilities are warehoused away from their communities. In my own work with people who have intellectual disabilities, I've met many folks across the province who they themselves have spent time locked in institutions, not for committing any crime, but merely for having a disability. When they talk about their time living behind institutional walls, they do so with anger. Miffed that anyone would think that it was okay to deny people their right to live in a community. And they are concerned for those with disabilities who remain languishing behind those walls, waiting for those promises that would lead to their freedom to be kept. In both the roadmap that's been mentioned and by signing on to the UN Convention of the Rights of People with Disabilities, Nova Scotia has committed to supporting people with disabilities to live with dignity and value in their communities. People First Nova Scotia urge this government to dedicate the necessary resources and take the action required to fulfill the promises made that this institutionalization of people with disabilities will stop by 2023.
Thanks very much, Donna. We've just received information that another member of People First Nova Scotia has been meeting with the Premier, Donnie McLean, sorry, I have his name there, and we'd like to invite Donnie up to speak to us for a moment. I'm going to just move the chair here.
Yeah, I was just talking to Steve McNeil at his office, and he said that he's getting things ready plans ready to get people out of institution. They've already started a little bit over the years with people in supervised apartments in Bridgetown. They got people out on their own. There's one here today with us, and he's been in a supervised home, and he was out for quite a few years out there, and they're getting them out slowly, but he's going to try to do it a little quicker. But as he's busy the next couple of weeks, but when he gets back, he's going to be doing it, and he's going to meet with me either up here in his office or down in his home, at his home, and we're going to speak about it, and he's going to try to get it to work on it, and he's going to get some of his staff and his board members to give him information and stuff on it, and he's going to read it, and he's going to figure out what to really do and what really, really is trying to happen, and he's going to try to get them out of the institutions. And the ones that he can't get out on their own, they're going to be supervised in small options homes, and that's what we're ready to do. That's the roadmap. So he's going to get that done, and he's going to see how far it's getting there. And after that, it'll be in a year or so, it will slowly be getting people out, you know, a few at a time, and before you know it, they'll be all out. Thank you.
Thank you, Donnie. Now I'd like to welcome up Barbara Adams, who is the PCMLA for Coal Harbour Eastern Passage and the PC spokesperson or critic for community services. And I will give up my seat to you now.
Thank you very much, and good morning. I'm actually now the critic for seniors, home care, and long-term care. And as a physiotherapist, I've been working with people with special needs since I was 12 years old. So I want to thank everyone who's here today and those who have the courage to come forward to speak. I think what we've seen in our province is that we have had a growing awareness that those with disabilities are being neglected in the sense that they have increased mobility issues, housing issues, transportation issues, income issues, and the fight for their rights needs to be brought front and center. And of course, in the legislature, we serve on the health committee, and of course, it comes up on a regular basis. One of the things that I wanted to say here today is that we need a plan for addressing the fact that we have an aging population and the number of seniors is going to double in the next 20 years. So there's going to be 32% of us, including me, who are going to be in the senior category. And so our housing needs and where we reside in the community is going to be critical. And we know that everyone wants to remain in their home or at least in their communities. And social isolation is one of the number one causes of health decline in our population. So we need to keep people as close to home as possible. So we need the government to have a better plan for everyone with disabilities. And I want to give you a statistic and use this opportunity to mention it because you don't become, you know, being able to be at home and needing, you know, assisted living overnight. It's a progression that we could intervene at any step of the way with the right assistive devices, the right renovations to the home, so better home renovation grants that people can actually access without having to be the lowest income earners is really, really important. The Human Rights Commission for Nova Scotia, they told me recently that 65% of the complaints that they have are about failure to accommodate people in the workplace who have disabilities of either mental or physical limitations. And the number one complaints they get is from people who work for the Nova Scotia Health Authority. That's number one. Number two is the Nova Scotia government. And number three is the municipal government. So all along the path of the journey from being well-abled to needing assistance is a journey that starts way beyond the point where you need to have to move into assisted living somewhere. So there's all sorts of opportunities this government can take to help keep everyone at home for as long as possible and in the workplace for as long as possible. And so we need to be working with employers to understand what duty to accommodate is. And so I thank everyone for being here today. And I'm so grateful that you have the courage to speak forward. And we need to keep this front and center because the percentage of Nova Scotians with some degree of disability is up at least to around 30%, and that's only going to climb. So we need to have a strategy, a disability strategy, not just a dementia strategy or an Alzheimer's strategy or an arthritis strategy. We need a frailty strategy from addressing the issues from the very highest level of function down to needing institutionalized care that we can hope provide more in the community than we do so now. So thank you very much for coming.
Thanks, Beth. Okay, great. Thank you, everyone. Everyone who has contributed to the conversation, and now we'll open up to questions. The Community Homes Action Group has worked this out, and it would mean 25 new homes for the next 3 years. Yeah. Oh, 1 second.
He just told me that he wanted to, when he gets back from Europe, he's going on a Europe trip on May 1st. So he's going to get back to us when he gets back, and he's going to have a meeting with me about a week or so after he gets back. And he's either going to have it in his office or at home, and he's going to tell me what's going on and what they're going to do from there and tell me dates and stuff like that. When he gets back.
When we can expect dates. Okay.
Yeah.
Anybody on the panel tell me what they think the disconnect is between what government says and what government actually does?
Anyone?
Well, they haven't really done anything in regards to the disability community since the mid-1990s when the children's training centers were closed. There was a moratorium on until just recently when they've committed to these 8 small option homes. So there has been no movement within this area for over 20 years. And I think it's important to also mention, you know, this does go back to the mid-90s. It goes beyond the roadmap. There have been numerous government reports written over the years that has given government direction of how to do this, how to do it right. We've got examples from other provinces. We've got best practices. This isn't something new that we're dreaming up. We've had a long history in this province of no movement whatsoever to support families raising kids with disabilities and to close our institutions. I think so. Feel free to.
Once they have a problem, or once they admit that there's a problem, they have to do something about it. So they don't want to admit it.
I might be able to answer a little bit more to that. It's like nothing's really happened for quite a while. So what do you think? It's people get used to staying where it, like they're not used to change. And it's like they get comfortable with that. Oh, well, we'll do it, yeah. But you need to step out of your comfort zone, go forward. Don't leave it on the back burner. You need to go forward because Nova Scotia has the highest rate. Other places in Canada have closed institutions with people with intellectual disabilities. Nova Scotia is the highest rate of still have institutions open. So what we need to do, government, whatever, we need to step out of our comfort zone, and we should move forward like other provinces, territories, and have people living out in the community. If they need support, that's fine. Let them have it, but everybody should be out living as much and fully in their community and have the same rights as anybody else.
That when people are in institutions for so long, they can't cope out in the community because they've been in institutions for so long, they don't know what to do. And we're trying to work around that to get them a better notion about what's out there, because if they don't, they're going to be just like everybody else. They're going to be in there and they're going to say, well, I don't know what this is because I've been locked up in an institution for so long, I don't know what the outside is going to do to me. And they get scared. So we have to talk to them and educate them to make sure that outside is a good place.
That's a very good point. And the other thing that we're talking about here is not just building bricks and mortar buildings for people to live in, but we also need to provide people with the specific supports that they need to live in the community. That could mean assisted devices, but it also could mean social workers and aides to accompany people through the community. Question here, Vicki?
In a way, that's what they're doing, but what they're trying to do is speak to the person themselves and try to get them to realize that the outside is good, and trying to get them to learn more about themselves and more about the community that they live in, instead of keeping them in the dark. Because if you keep them in the dark, they don't know what's going on and what you're doing to them, and they get scared.
Go ahead.
Just in response to your question as well, certainly in my 30 years of experience in this field, I have encountered many people who had been living in institutions where those institutions have said there's no way this person can live in the community. They don't have the skills. They need too much support. We are the only place that could support this person successfully, only to have those people move in the community and flourish and absolutely move beyond any expectations that those staff or those people that were running the institutions believed that they could, and they have gone on to accomplish amazing things and to live very high-quality lives.
Just want to clarify, is there any more questions from the media? We'd like to hear from the media first in case people have to go and file stories.
Yeah,
yep.
I just have one. The 8 small option homes, how far from what's needed is that? Like, how much of just a Band-Aid is that to this actual issue? What's needed?
Well, the Community Homes Action Group has said that what is needed to complete the goals of the roadmap is 25 new small options homes for the next 3 years. So that's 75 homes, I think. Is my math right? And so we have plans for 8. Now, of those 8, those have been on the books for 3 years now. This, I believe this is the third budget. I might be wrong. It might be the second budget. And 2 of them are completed, and 6 of them are still in like request for proposal stages. So we don't know when those ones will be completed. So 75 take away 8, what's that?
Too many.
It's too many, exactly. Robert.
What we do know is that there are approximately 1,500 people on the wait list, on the current government wait list. I think it's much, much higher than that if we're talking about parents who are seniors and who have not put their sons or daughters on a wait list.
Mm-hmm.
24-hour support.
24-hour support. So is that like a dedicated care person or?
Yes.
One person.
Yeah, Jen organizes different assistants and also has a. A housemate who is there at night when she's sleeping and gets up if she's needed.
Any other questions from the media? Sorry, Jennifer, sorry.
Question from Mr. McLean. Mr. McLean, I'm just wondering if the premier in your meeting today gave you any explanation or reason for why more small option homes haven't already been built.
He didn't really say it. He said he was working on it, and he said after he comes back from where he's going, and he said he's going to talk to me either at his home or at his office and tell me the dates and tell me what he's going to do to the small option homes and what he's working on with his other cabinets and that. And he's going to give me a figure when he gets back.
He's going to give you some kind of a commitment? You felt that he's going to give you some
He said he was going to give the commitment to it. After he gets back, he's going to talk to me and give me some figures and stuff and see what he's going on and what the process is and how long it's going to take.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, yeah, someone over here has been waiting for a long time. Thank you very much, Alice. Are there any other questions or points of discussion? Yes.
So you're encouraging people, or there's people who are being encouraged to raise a human rights violation. If somebody out there was listening and wanted to do that, is there fault in them to do that? Is it like a process that's very complicated?
Want me to echo that? The question was, many people at the table have spoken about encouraging people with disabilities to file their own human rights complaints against the province and wondering if there is assistance or help or guidance in making those complaints. I wonder, is there someone who can speak to that at the table?
Okay. Website is set up, so you could go to the website and find information there. And I just want to say as well, the Board of Inquiry that just happened took 5 years for this, with a lot of pullback from government. So it was a really long process for these three individuals. So individual families, parents who are stressed and are alone and isolated, it's going to be a very daunting process unless we can come together to address this.
I would also say, so there's the Disability Rights Coalition website where there's lots of resources, and also you could just, so someone could just contact the Human Rights Commission and follow and get information about how to proceed there. Question? I wonder if someone might want to speak to that. I mean, that's sort of what happened in the last complaint with the three individuals plus the Disability Rights Coalition. Barb, would you like to speak to that a little bit?
I'm not sure I'm qualified to speak. I don't know if somebody else may want to. Okay.
Claire McNeil is here, who from the Disability Rights Coalition.
So it's a really important question as to what kind of access to justice there is for this large group.
Yeah.
So
sorry, can you speak into the mic so you can go on the top?
Come on up here, Claire. You can use my mic.
That's
I'm here to, I was a lawyer who represented the Disability Rights Coalition before the tribunal that rendered the decision that we're talking about with respect to the three individuals. And for the three individuals, the board spoke very strongly about the nature of the discrimination that they had faced that resulted in them being locked away and deprived of their liberty and not allowed to live in the community for such a long period of time. And the board described it as indifference bordering on contempt. And so we knew that going into this. You know, it took four lawyers, you know, 5 years before the tribunal, but then there were years before then when we worked on this and tried to prepare it. So you imagine how long it took the Human Rights Commission, because the Human Rights Commission itself has limited resources, to see this complaint through to its completion. Just imagine 1,500 people, so times 1,500, it's going to take decades. So it's really not a reasonable option for many people. It's going to create a lot of access to justice problems. People are not going to be able to get their rights vindicated in a timely way. And as we know, justice delayed is justice denied for many people, including one of the individual complainants who died during the course of this proceeding. So it requires we're here today to hear from people who have lived experience, who are here to speak out, to call on the government to take the action that's needed to address what's a human rights crisis. And that's ultimately a government responsibility. It's not a human rights tribunal. It's not within the power of any of us here, but it is within the power of government, and government's already promised to do this. So simply the people here are asking for that. You've mentioned other legal avenues. Again, serious issues around delay, around getting access to counsel, getting access to the kind of expert evidence that's needed in these proceedings. There's huge barriers to people that are just unnecessary, we say. Totally unnecessary. The government knows what needs to be done. It's been reviewed and studied by government experts up the yin-yang for 30 years. Community living is well understood. It's totally within our grasp. It requires action by the government. So I support what people here are saying, that I'm a lawyer, and I would say the legal process is a necessary evil. Obviously, people will avail themselves to the extent that they're able to if they have to, but it's totally unnecessary in these circumstances.
Vicki, did you have your hand up?
No.
Okay. Anyone else? Well, listen, this has been an excellent discussion. Thank you so much to all of the people up here who have offered your insights to this important discussion. And thank you all for your attention and for your excellent questions. Thanks so much. Yes.